I wonder if you know the game show Deal or No Deal. It finished a couple of years ago, but I think it's probably still within living memory. We're going to play our own little game of Deal or No Deal here at the start. So I've got to ask my glamorous assistants, please, to come down and join me here at the front, and I'll explain how it's going to work. So if you don't know it, the game, there are five, it's a slimmed down version. There are five boxes here, and each of them, apart from one, contains a prize. And my most glamorous assistant, Adam, sorry, Chloe, is going to be the one playing the game. So, Adam, if you come stand in the middle, and firstly, could you choose a box numbered 1 to 5? Which box would you like to have? Box number 3, okay, let me find that for you. Here's box number 3, so don't open it. Don't open it, just maybe hold it facing everyone. And then, guys, if I could ask you to kind of arrange yourselves in in numerical order around Adam, okay? So, in a line. There we go. So, Adam has a box. Hopefully, there's a wonderful prize in it. The prizes range from nothing to £1,000. Not a bad prize, I think you'll agree. Adam simply has to, one by one, open these boxes or have them revealed, ones that are going to be opened. And we'll see what's inside them. Now, hopefully, Adam is holding the top prize. And he needs to hold his nerve in order to get that wonderful prize. Okay? Adam, what is the first box you would like to be revealed? Box 5. Give him box 5. What's in box 5? No. You open the box. Don't take... Okay. There we go. This is why you prepare things in advance. £100. Okay, well done, Adam. It's not the top prize. The top prize is still out there. Could have been nice, though, £100, but never mind. Okay, well, the other thing is, the banker, the player in the game, makes offers throughout the game for an attempt to give up your box. So the £100 is gone. I'm going to offer you maybe £20 for your box, Adam. What do you say? No? Okay, fine. He's holding his nerve. He's holding the box. Okay, next box to be revealed, please. Box number 2. £1. Oh, that's a good one to get out of the way. Wonderful. Okay, good work. Okay, Adam, well, okay, so my offer has to be higher now because the lower prize is gone. I'm going to offer you £50. He's confident. Okay. Okay. next box to be revealed, please. Okay, £20. Ooh, okay, he's doing well. Is he going to hold his nerve right to the end? Let's see. Adam, I'm going to offer you £200 for your box. What do you say? That's a handsome offer. No. Wow, Adam is confident. He's confident that he is holding the top prize of £100. So please, could you reveal box number 1? What's inside? Oh, Adam, can you open your box? Nothing. Adam, I'm so sorry. I'm not, because I didn't have £1,000 to give you, but never mind. Can I have a big hand for my glamorous assistants, please? Okay. Thank you, Adam. Okay, well, that game hinges on what you think the box is worth. What you think the contents of this are worth. What do you think is valuable? And how valuable you think it is compared to other things. If you get that right, if you value it correctly, then you win big. If you get it wrong, you lose everything. And Adam joins the lines of what is called the Nothing Club. People who went on Deal or No Deal and came away with nothing. And the greatest tragedy as you watch it are people like Adam there, who were convinced that what they had was something valuable and precious, and it turned out to be worthless. Well, the passage we just read from the Bible tells a story of somebody who thought they had the winning box. They thought they had the biggest prize. But then they met Jesus, and they had to reevaluate what they had and reevaluate everything. Now, that man was Paul. You might have heard of him. Paul lived at the same time as Jesus and then after Jesus, but he wasn't a follower of Jesus, at least not at first. And the thing you have to know about Paul is that he was the right kind of person. He had everything in here. He was sorted. He was the guy. He was the right kind of person. He had the right pedigree. He was a Jew. That means he was one of God's special people. Out of the whole world, Jews were special. He was not just a Jew. He was the right kind of Jew from the right family, set up to be, from birth, a special, important guy. Not just that, he had the right education. He was a Pharisee. That meant he knew his Bible inside out. He was so religious, so disciplined, so strict, so particular. You looked at Paul and you saw someone who was good, someone who had it together. And he wasn't just talk. He wasn't just, you know, squeaky clean outward appearance. He was a man of action. And he lived at the time when Christianity was a kind of weird early cult, where there were these people going around saying that God had somehow become a man, which was terrible to a Jew. And then not only that, but that God in man, as a man, had died. And to a Jew, that was the worst kind of blasphemy. So Paul did the right thing, and he went out and he found these Christians. He hunted them down, threw them in prison, so they couldn't infect anyone else with their horrible teaching. Paul was the business. He had everything. He had everything in life that was good. He had it in here. Dads would have said to their little kids, "Son, you grow up to be like Paul, and I will be so proud of you." Draw up a list of winners and losers, and Paul was the biggest winner. And then one day, Paul met Jesus. Everything changed. Look at that, the handout you have there. I think you have the Bible passage. Verse 7, he writes, "Whatever were gains to me, I now consider loss." Meeting Jesus made Paul re-evaluate everything that was in here, everything that he had. Verse 8, he says, "I consider them garbage." Now, if I was to tell you the kind of actual translation of that word, I probably wouldn't have a job tomorrow. It's a bit rude. The closest I could get would be maybe something that you step in. And you want to get off your foot as quickly as possible. Something smelly, something unmentionable, something offensive. You want to get it away from you as quickly as you can. Paul met Jesus and he realized that what he had, the things he prized, the things that made him a winner, actually, if he held on to them, he was on a fast track to join the nothing club. We'll come back to why that was in a minute. But I want to ask for you, what is in here? What have you got in here? What is valuable about your life? What is good? What would make you into a winner? Maybe it's things that you have. Maybe you're here and getting a good degree, an education that means you're going to succeed in life. Maybe it's being in a certain social class, which means you can afford nice holidays and nice clothes and you can give your kids a good education. Maybe it's the relationships that you have, family and friends who love you. Maybe it's your aptitudes, your abilities, you're clever, you can succeed in life, you can make life work for you. Maybe you're attractive and people like you. Maybe it's things you don't have yet, you expect. Maybe opportunities that are coming up in life. Maybe a time when you want to be financially independent, maybe even own a house. Who knows, you millennials out there? Maybe the partner you want to meet, the family you want to have, the job you want to get that will bring respect and status. Whatever would make you a winner, whatever would be top prize for you, put it in here for me. Put it in here. Imagine it here. All your hopes, your dreams, your loves, your aspirations, everything you want. Feel the weight of it. Feel the preciousness of it. How much you would treasure this. Then hear again those words of Paul. Whatever was to my gain, I now consider loss. The sake of Jesus. Paul says that when you meet Jesus, this becomes trash, garbage, worthless. And you might think, why? Why would I make such a kind of radical re-evaluation? Why would I do that? I remember speaking to a student a few years ago, and he told me that that was everything he disliked about Christianity. Something sinister about taking good things and saying they're worthless, about turning upside down your ideas of good and bad. He called it inversion of value. He said that's a bad thing. We shouldn't do that. Is that what Paul's doing? Look at verse 8 again. I consider everything a loss compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. It's a comparison. Paul's not saying the stuff that's in here, those things aren't bad. They're not bad in themselves. The Bible isn't down on family and on job and on all those kind of things. Christianity is very positive about all those things. But Paul is saying there is something, someone so much better, so much surpassing those things. so much greater. But by comparison, these things are like something you find stuck to the bottom of your shoe. That's how much greater he is. But why is he so wonderful? Well, partly who he is. Christians believe Jesus is the Son of God, God in human form. But also because of what he gives. And this is the verse that, unfortunately, isn't on your handout. I apologize, that's my fault. I won't read it out all again, but it says this. It says that Jesus gives us righteousness. Now, we don't use that word righteousness much. The closest thing we'd have is maybe in a courtroom when someone's declared not guilty. But even that has these kind of overtones of getting away with something, so it doesn't quite work. It means to be perfect, to be upright, to be in good standing with the law, in good standing with the world. We might use the word validation, it kind of comes close to it, to know that you're real, that you're worth something, that you're okay with other people, you're okay with whatever powers might be out there. There's nothing against you, nothing hanging over you. Paul wanted that validation. He wanted that worth, that righteousness. And he did what we all do, which was to take what is in here and to try to get it using this. Paul was using this to fill him, to give him worth, to make him okay with God. And surely, Paul had it all. If anyone could do it, surely Paul could. But when he met Jesus, he realized it could never work. Because what the Christians were saying was true. Jesus really had died. He really had been raised. He really was God as a man. That meant that Paul, all his life, had been fighting against God. All his life, he had been living in a world where Jesus was the central reality, the big deal, and Paul had been ignoring him, fighting against him. And that left Paul in a terrible situation because Jesus isn't the type of person you can ignore without consequences. But when he met Jesus, he found out something wonderful too. He found out that Jesus had given his life to cover Paul's wrongness. And Jesus was offering Paul, his own righteousness, his own perfection, his own worth, his own validation. He was offering it to Paul. And to take hold of that, Paul had to reevaluate everything. He had to change his mind about Jesus. The Bible word is repent, to change his thinking. He had to change what he thought about himself and about Jesus. He had to change his mind about what was in here and admit that none of this could give him the righteousness, the validation he was after. And in fact, everything that he thought was precious, everything he was trusting in, could actually be his greatest loss because it could stop him from taking hold of Jesus, what he offered. Not just that, you know, what's in here is good, but Jesus was better, as if Paul had second prize, like, you know, the £100 over here. You know, it's not the £1,000, but it's still pretty good. Not that. Paul says, I consider it loss, damage. Because if it stops me from taking hold of Jesus, then that makes me the biggest loser possible. If you've never heard it, this is the Christian message, that there is the possibility of knowing Jesus, meeting him, not in the same way as Paul did, not now, but encountering him through his life-changing message and of embracing his agenda for your life and having him take your wrongness and give you his rightness. But in order to do that, you have to evaluate everything again and say, nothing in here can do it. When you meet Jesus, you reevaluate everything. Well, yeah, you might say, yeah, but I won't meet Jesus because this isn't true. None of it's real. Yeah, maybe Jesus was a real person, but then, you know, he died. And then someone came up with a story about him rising from the dead, and people just got carried away, and it just kind of spread like that. I ask you, look at Paul. Look at what he's saying. He was at the top. And he was willing to go right down to the bottom. If it's not true, what did that? What changed Paul? If it's not true. You might say, well, that doesn't prove anything. You might have seen in the headlines the last few days, articles coming up about the Waco cult in Texas. I think I'm saying that right. 30 years ago, you had one man making huge claims that he was Jesus, come again. And people believed him. Ordinary people believed what he was saying, to the extent that in the end, they were willing to set their own buildings, their own compound on fire, to kill their children, to stop them escaping, rather than to be captured, rather than to go out, rather than to admit that it might not be true. That's how much they were taken in. Can't Paul just be the same? Just sacrificing yourself, that doesn't mean something's true. Look at suicide bombers, they sacrifice themselves, doesn't mean it's true. Every so often you'll hear of maybe a Tibetan monk who will set themselves on fire. Doesn't mean that what they're saying is true. Isn't Paul just like all of those? No, he isn't. Not like those, and there's one big difference. Paul knew whether it was true or not. He was in a position to know the truth of the things he was saying, because he said he met Jesus. All of those other examples. Let's take the cult. They weren't in a position to know. They were just taken in by what someone was saying. They weren't in a position to know. The suicide bombers. They're not in a position to know the truth of what they're dying for. Paul was. He knew whether it was true or not. Look at the history. Hundreds of people who met Jesus. Hundreds of people who said they met him after he had died. They were willing to be the very bottom of society. They were willing to have their property taken away. They were willing to be insulted, willing to be tortured, imprisoned, torn apart, burned. And all they had to do was say, it's not true, we made it up. By an overwhelming majority, they didn't. They died for it, knowing whether it was true or not. And that's what makes it different. And if you want to write off Christianity, can I say you need an explanation for that? Why they would do that. For other people, maybe your question is not that kind of is it true question, but what will it mean? What would it mean for me to follow Jesus? Does it literally mean throwing all these things away? Well, for Paul, it did. It meant going right from the top to right to the bottom. It meant siding with the people he persecuted. It meant losing his position, his status, his respect, his authority, losing everything. What would it mean for you? Would it mean literally giving up everything and going and living in a monastery? Or what would it mean? It doesn't necessarily mean that. What Paul's saying is it does mean making that same reevaluation of everything in your life and everything that's happening. Of saying, these things are worth nothing compared to Jesus. And even if I do lose them, if I gain Jesus, I win by a mile. And if these things stop me from taking hold of Jesus, then I lose. And this room is full of people who said that. Full of people who have made that reevaluation of their lives, who've met Jesus. We've got people here who decided to follow Jesus knowing that it would alienate their friends who wouldn't agree or wouldn't understand. Knowing it would put a rift between them and their families, who would see it as a rejection of them. We've got people here who follow Jesus, even though it means giving up on a lifestyle that they aspired to, that they could have achieved. There's one lady here in this church who, even the last few weeks, was publicly attacked and slandered and had horrible things said about her on social media and out in public. Because she dared to invite children and families along to a Christian holiday club. They wanted to chase her out of town, but she wouldn't. Because she answers to Jesus. Ask people. Talk to them. Find out. And they will tell you, no matter what it is, no matter what the cost, he is worth it. And if that's true, if they're saying that, then surely there's something here that's worth checking out. Surely it's worth finding out a little bit more so you can make an informed decision about this. How might you do that? Well, I think we're going to be hearing from one of our church members shortly after this about how they came to decide this, decided to follow Jesus. There are other ways. On the way out, you'll see some of these books, which are about Jesus and the evidence for him being real and really dying, really rising from the dead, really being the Son of God. Pick one up. If you're going to read it, it's free. Or maybe take one of these, our Questioning Christianity course. Great for people who are just checking out, finding out what Christianity is about. Take that away with you. Investigate. Look further. Make an informed decision about Jesus. Don't be the person who just holds on to this and then finds out it's worthless. Because Jesus, who is so much greater and so much better for you, is inviting you. He says, will you reevaluate what's in here? Will you take everything that you think is precious in life and look again? Will you count it loss compared to me? Will you be willing to drop it so that you can take hold of me instead? Deal?